Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Mighty Cast, number 75, The Stretch Zone. I am Chris, and I am doing this podcast with the wonderful Nick Ritchie, all the way over in South Korea. Hi, Nick. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Chris. Doing pretty good. Beautiful day here. Doing one rep work this week, and I'm really tired, actually. But so are you. What is it over there, like 4:30 or 5:30 right now?
No, it's 10 to 9 in the morning. It's just that...
Why?
I got up at 8, so I'm still a bit croaky. So, sorry, listeners. Anyway, well, we are talking today about the stretch zone, which is, it's really your concept, Nick, isn't it?
Oh, it's not my concept. I've borrowed this from who knows who. Somewhere in the self-development literature. Actually, I think it might have been Tal Ben-Shahar that I might have heard this or something very similar to it from.
Okay.
He was the used to be a Harvard professor of positive psychology and wrote a book called Happier, and now just does consulting for big companies and stuff for the most part. But I think he's the guy that I originally heard it from. But yeah, the stretch zone is an awesome concept. Whoever it's originally from, love it, use it all the time. And if you're the guy that started it, let me know. If it's not Tal Ben-Shahar, I'll give you proper credit.
I have heard of him. He's one of those who is not prolific in the writing book sense, but you sort of hear of his lecturing and his ideas, don't you?
You bet. Actually, his books are really good too. I think he has a couple books out, but I've only looked at Happier.
Okay. This podcast is quite a weird one because I put it together, but really Nick is the expert on this, and I started putting it together because I was working around the idea of a blog post that I did about a month ago called Your Own Reality, where everything is relative to what you do. And I started off with, okay, well, if you're in an environment where the best bench press is 100 kilos, then you're unlikely to become, world champion in the bench press, benching 180, because you're so far out of your reality that it's unlikely to happen. Yeah, I'm not saying it's never happened. Of course, you've had great lifters and great bodybuilders and strongmen and all the rest of it come out of average gyms. But it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder. If you're training at Westside Barbell, it's more likely you're going to have that 200-kilo bench press than if you're training at Fitness First in Putney or something. Just picked a London suburb there. Top of my head. Don't even know if they have one.
There's one at London Bridge, but yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, all right, we'll go London Bridge. But the more I thought about it, the more I sort of thought, well, this is more sort of akin to the stretch zone, which Nick talks about. So the whole title of it changed and the whole premise changed. But I think it's something... Yeah, obviously we've touched upon this before. This is the 75th podcast, and if we hadn't talked about the mental aspect of strength, fitness, fat loss, etc., by now, then we'd be pretty remiss, wouldn't we? We'd be being shot down all over the place. But this sort of puts it all together, and I have to admit, Nick, I do like the idea of the stretch zone. It's sort of encapsulates it. It kind of if used properly, it kind of nullifies the issues surrounding a bad environment, whether it's a training environment or whether it's a home environment with people saying, oh, why do you want to lose weight? You look just fine the way you are. But really meaning, I don't want you to lose any more weight because it's going to make me look worse.
You bet. Actually, I talk about that a little bit in the Earn Your Carbs videos, just because it's so true. I go home and everybody's like, Nick, you're so lean and stuff. And I'm going, shit, this is heavy for me, and I'm going to gain 20 pounds on top of it. You know, it's really relative, really, really relative.
It is. It's a massive thing. Where I have my own gym, as regular listeners will know, sits in my back garden, and there's several lifters come round every week, and we train, and it is totally different. And we got a couple of new guys, and they're just, the first couple of times they stand there, they're absolutely amazed at what's happening, and there's music belting out, and every time there's a set, there's psyching up going on. There might be some slapping around the face. If Russ misses a lift, he calls everyone a rude word and storms out and has a hissy fit. We laugh at him and
digs a hole in China, fills it back up. Then he's ready for the next set.
Yeah. If I miss a lift, I rarely curse. But you know, the other day I did, because I called the wrong weight and I got a rep less than I wanted to, which is not acceptable these days.
You know what happens if I miss a lift?
If you miss a lift, Nick.
Yep, it's the vernal equinox.
That was great, wasn't it? Nick's referring to a guy on YouTube, the bro scientist, who he had a how to skip leg day video, and he's storming around the gym. And well, should we lose our non-explicit link?
Yeah, forget about that. We're no longer concerned with the non-explicit.
Okay, but he's got a great sort of, I would say, Joe DeFranco-esque, but someone else would say, I don't know, what's that MTV show with New Jersey people in? I don't know. I never watch it. But
Jersey Shore, maybe? Yeah, I've never seen
There you go. Jersey Shore. Yeah, he's storming around the gym. He goes, I fucking knew it. And he comes out into the car park and he goes, it's the fucking vernal equinox. I can't train on the vernal equinox. I love it. It's just, you know, it's pretty much saying any excuse not to train legs.
Yeah. And he was doing lunges going through the gym, and then it just slowly turned into less and less of a lunge and then into a curl. Dumbbells, yeah. It was just hilarious.
You can't do fucking lunges with no arm pump.
Oh, great video. We'll link to that one.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so if Nick misses a lift, it's the fucking vernal equinox.
Just because I never do it. Like, last night I was benching. I had a nice, fairly nice, it was hard, but like a 115 bench. And I was going, I could probably do 120 today. And then I went, no. Make sure it's definitely there, not probably. So, six more weeks, we'll try that again.
Well, the thing is, what you have, and this is one of our famous tangents, dear listeners, but what Nick has that not many people have is an amazing amount of patience. Yeah. He will say, okay, no, I won't push it today, whereas most people get, you know, caught up in the moment, or if they're a sort of motivated trainer, they can get caught up in the moment and go, oh, come on, yeah, gonna put the weight up, and you get great, great weight calls. Like I was talking to Dazzler, one of my training partners, and we were doing the most stupid thing about a year, 2 years ago. We were doing reverse band squats, and we both got 275 kilos, and we're sort of going, okay, what next? And we go 285. And sort of 285, oh yeah, okay. And they go, well, 285 is close to 300, right? So let's just do 300. So we put, yeah, this is something Nick would never do. He'd never sort of go, you know, your mathematical mind would kick in and go, no, that's just stupid. But we talked ourselves in that, oh yeah, oh, come on, get 300. And the stupid thing was, I took it out and missed it. Obviously, I crashed. Yeah. And he didn't recall the weight at that point. He crashed as well. It's just absolute pointless. And when you crash with a reverse band squat and you've got 300 kilos on the bar, that's a lot of weight to take off the bar. Yeah, you're stripping the bar down, you're re-racking it, putting the weight back on. It's just a pain in the ass. It really is. And, yeah, we're stupid like that. That's because we got caught up in the moment. We've done nice fast reps with 275. And then, he just does a stupid weight call like that. Yeah. Nick would never do that.
Well, the funny thing is like, I had it on the bar because I know, like, I'll track what my predicted max is, which doesn't mean a whole lot, but I mean, it's saying I should be able to do about 130 for the bench right now. So I'm going, I have it on the bar, but I'm thinking about how it felt on the last rep, and I know that my technique was just a little bit off. And so I was just like, nope, fuck it. It's got to be right on before I up it again. So I had the weight on the bar. I was all ready to go, but luckily I had like a 3-minute rest period on those top sets, 3 to 5 minutes. And that was enough time to get my head in the right place and not do it.
But that's excellent because you're calling, you're really good at calling your own weights and you haven't got the support structure that I've got here. I've often said that Russ is just weight caller extraordinaire. He is fantastic at calling weights. Yeah, I'll often sort of go, if I'm doing a deadlift and I'll go, okay, I've done, let's say it's a vanilla deadlifts, yeah, so just deadlifts for sets of four. And let's say I've done 200 and I go, right, 210, and he'll go 205. And he'll be absolutely, 205 will be, you know, I'll get four with another one there.
Yep.
Whereas if I've gone 210, I might have got four, but the last one would have been headbutt.
Yeah, ugly. Yeah.
So it's great having, but you seem to be able to do that yourself, which is an excellent attribute to have. Some would call it a talent, actually.
Yeah, it's somewhat necessitated by some of my circumstances for training too. If I can't miss a lift, I'm going to be focusing a lot more on my form and you know, my ability to actually perform it. Whereas other people, if it's safe to fail, they might push it a little bit more as well, I think.
Yes. Of course, yes. The safety net aspect of it is obviously at the forefront of your mind. But
because when I was at your place, I'd overdo it all the time.
So you say you're
like 5 years ago or something, right? But you know, it's, I guess I've changed a bit as a trainer as well. So.
Yeah, it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So you're saying you're just as much of an idiot as the rest of us?
I think so.
Really, underneath it all.
Underneath it all, I mean it, you bet.
Or maybe, actually, Nick, maybe you've actually learned something in the last 5 years, unlike me.
Yeah, well, there could be that just a little bit, but underneath it all, there's the idiot just waiting to be found.
So, going back to the script, as it were, so the object of this podcast is to really give you the tools to become more like Nick and less like me.
That's a very flattering way to put it.
But, or shall we say, to be able to overcome environmental constraints. So that might be a gym where, you know, most of the guys who train there are, you know, like the bro scientist, never do legs, you know, turn lunges into curls and curl in the squat rack and stuff like that. Or have sociological constraints. So not very supportive, family and friends, you know, your friends. What do you want to go to the gym for? You know, well, why aren't you happy looking like shit like the rest of us do? Come on. let's go out and, sit in the pub and talk about how we're wasting our lives, yeah, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So with the tools here, hopefully you can start to overcome this. And obviously the first move is how do you start to prepare? So,
Could I add one thing real quick since you just mentioned relationships and environment? So just because I've been doing these, the last summary videos, I have one more to shoot. I've done the audio for it, and then I have the final video for the series, which I'm so excited to be happening here. But like in the videos we talk about, I talk about your areas of influence, right? And your areas of control, and your influence would be your environment and your relationships, because there's a whole lot you can do. But then there's also your area of control where really it's all on you. Like if your diet's not there, that's all on you, buddy. You know, if your training's not there, that's your ass not getting into the gym. You know, and if your sleep's not there, again, these are all things that if you want to put your mind to it and you want to prepare for them and you want to do them, you have 100% control over if you want. So I would say your environment is super important because it can influence all those things drastically. But your diet, your environments and relationships really influence your diet, your training, and your sleep. And so I'd say kind of like the big five are what we're trying to improve at your stretch zone, because those are all things that you can directly or indirectly control more or less close to 100%.
Yeah.
Environment being the big what if, right? So that's kind of the toughest one.
Well, the thing is, what you've done there, Nick, is you've sort of you've shrunk down all these your own reality. You've shrunk down everything within that and pretty much said, look, it's all on you. And it is all on you when it comes down to it. You know, Nick, for example, with your training environment, you know, you could say, what's the point in South Korea? They haven't got any bloody decent gyms. When I find a gym that's even got a barbell, it's full of idiots who won't put the collars on, and the weights are falling off all over the place. What's the point? Yes, you can use anything as an excuse. But you have to almost embrace the responsibility, don't you? I suppose we're getting ahead of ourselves here, and say no, you know, it's on me. Okay, I can't do what I did when I was living in London, in your case, Nick, but I can still do this.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, concentrate on what you can do. There's we've spoken about Pavel Satsling's Power to the People program, haven't we?
I
think it's Power to the People, where he just says a barbell, that's all you need, the Power to the People program is deadlifts and floor press. There's not even bench press. You don't even need a bench.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a barbell, you can do that sort of training, and you can get a monster deadlift, and you can get a, you know, pretty damn impressive floor press, which will, to a certain degree, cross over to a good bench press.
Yep.
And let's face it, what else is there in life?
Well, I mean, and just with the barbell, right? You know, you can clean, and then if you can clean, you can press, or you can front squat, you know, and, you know, there's a whole lot you can do, and you just always got to do the best you can, you know, with what you're able.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely it. Absolutely. I was having a real good guy. He's I have to admit, I was very suspicious when I first met him. He's into sports medicine, nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much looking at people's medical problems and helping solve them through intelligent supplementation and good food choices. And he really helped my partner out a few years ago, massively. I was a bit skeptical. You know, he sort of goes, sports medicine, nutrition. That sounds a bit pseudo scientific. But I remember chatting to him, and it was just, he was saying about how, it's really hard to get, good quality sleep in London, because you've got all these, you know, electrical signals buzzing around. You've got light all over the place. You've got this, you've got that, you've got the other. And I just said, I have to disagree with you. And he said, what are you disagreeing with? You know, that electrical signals can interfere with your sleep, which, you know, there's been no evidence to really show that. I don't believe. I could be wrong there. And I said, no, I have to disagree with you, because if I agree with you, I pretty much have a choice if I moved out of London to get a decent night's sleep, or you know, I'm stuffed. I'll never be I'll never be the athlete, lifter, whatever that I potentially could be. And you can't believe that living in a city means that you can't get a good night's sleep. That's okay. I don't get many good night's sleep, but that's beside the point. I used to. But yeah, that's a case of making the most of your environment. If you truly believe, oh well, I live in London, there's no real, yeah, I'm not going to be moving out of here anytime soon, and that means I can't sleep well. Well, you're sabotaging your own efforts straight away. Oh, I've only got a barbell set and a crappy old squat rack and a rickety bench. I can't get strong. Well, yeah, if you say that, you can't get strong.
Yeah.
So yeah. Right. Shall we?
Yeah. Going on to the first point.
Do you want to talk about the goal again, Nick? Or
well, you put down smart here, but yeah, you want to review that real quick?
Yeah. So for the absolute beginners who have never heard us or looked at a Tony Robbins book or whatever before, a SMART goal is a specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound goal. Okay, so specific means it's not just a general idea of I want to get fit. It would be I want to run a 10-kilometer race in 45 minutes next June. So that would be on June the 3rd, whatever the date of it is. So that would be a specific goal. I want to get fit is nebulous. There's no constraints to it. Measurable, refer to my last answer. So 10 kilometers, you measure it from start to finish. The amount of time it takes you, you measure it by a stopwatch and, there you go. It's measurable. Attainable. So, you know, Nick's goal was to deadlift 800 kilos. Is that attainable? Well, no one's ever done anything like that before. If we got on a rocket and went to the moon, he might have a shot at it. But, on this planet, it's unlikely. Not until we have, a lot more high potency drugs or DNA sequencing. So that'll be not an attainable goal. Is it a relevant goal?
When I'm super rich, man, I'm just going to go to the moon to prove you wrong.
Yes, exactly.
And that would make it both attainable and relevant.
There you go. Nick's a contrarian, listeners. He's just going to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah, you've never been a contrarian.
Just a bit. So relevant is, so if you want to be a powerlifter and your goal is to row 2000 meters in under 7 minutes. Well, what's that got to do with being a better lifter? It's probably not going to help you at all. And, we were talking earlier, off air that, actually doing tough cardio could hinder your strength gains in the gym. So it might actually be detrimental to your strength goals. So make sure that what you're doing is relevant and it's time bound. So going back to the first example of running a 10K in 45 minutes on the 3rd of June when there's a specific race. So that's within a certain time. Even if you haven't got a race or, you know, in our case, a powerlifting meet, then it's good to schedule in, occasional test days to see where you are. Because obviously if you're not measuring whether you're improving or not, how do you really know? There are ways to know. And, both Nick and I, use, one rep max estimates. So, we might not go to say a one rep max bench press regularly, but I know that if I do three at a certain weight, that would calculate out to a one at such and such. And we also have done one rep maxes enough to know how accurate this is.
Yeah. Plus, minus 10%.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think the calculation of reps times weight times 0.0333 plus that's weight.
Pretty good is for the lower accurate. Rep. For the lower rep.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of my clients at my work gym just did a rack pull of 272, so 600 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, really, he's only been doing it for 8 weeks. Wow. Shout out to Mark Samuels. You're a beast in the making, sir. Yeah. Yeah. And a pleasure to train, I might add. About a week ago, he did 245 for three, which if you use the calculation, comes out to 269, and he hit 272.5 yesterday, and that was pretty much a good max. Maybe there was 275 there, maybe, but it panned out quite well with him. But that was taking a three rep lift and extrapolating it to a one rep max. The higher reps you do, the less accurate the calculation is.
Yeah.
And myself and Russ, a couple of years ago, we'd sort of do high rep bench press and then see what it came out at, and it comes out ridiculously skewed.
Yeah. I did that with my squat once. I did a ridiculous number of reps at like...
That's right.
I don't remember what it was like. I think it was like 140. I did like close to 20 reps or something, and the predicted max was just through the roof, and I was going, nah, that's not right.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes it's the old thing, when it sounds too good to be true, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So the goal is part of the plan. And this is something, this was in my head, Nick, so because you brought it up as something that really annoyed you, and it comes back to part of the SMART goal, I guess, but I think it needs a bit of special attention, and that is the attainable, or I put appropriate here, and not to be unrealistic, because there's so many people who are unrealistic with their expectations, aren't they? I know you probably want to say something about this, Nick.
Oh, sure. Let's so I've got two people I love to pieces that I'm helping with a little bit of fat loss. One I'm actually coaching. The other one is just somebody who I see often enough. And, I told him the other day, like, dude, I'm just not losing weight. I'm moving around. I'm doing lots of exercise and this and that and the other thing. And I was like, I said, what's your goal? I just want to be more fit.
Yeah.
I said, nebulous goals, nebulous results. do you want to lose 2 inches off your waist? Do you want to put on 10 pounds of muscle? I don't want to commit to any of that yet. All right. Well, don't commit. You're not gonna get it. Whereas, as another friend, he's got a month where he's not gonna drink, and I think that's absolutely wonderful. We're gonna do as much as we can with him in that month where he's not drinking. But realistically, what can you do in a month? Especially if the drinking comes back later, is that gonna make the effort worth it? I'm trying to convince him to go 2 months without drinking here, and see what we can do so he can get a better idea of how much it's impacting his fat loss. But it's something that happens over I've been doing this for years and almost decades, over a decade anyway, with the fat loss stuff, and I'm still learning new shit and keep on getting a better and better set point, It's not something that comes quickly or easily, and to think that you can work like, a Rocky montage for, like a year to get you to what we want to be at, it's not going to happen. You're going to have to, you can go through bursts, and stuff, but then you got to recover and rest and, have a little bit of a social life and not be an asshole and irritated all the time and get a little sleep. there's real life to be lived in between. And, a lot of people have very unrealistic expectations when it comes to time. And, if they want to go down the quick route, you know, it's usually just going to be a lot of wasted effort, a whole lot of wasted money, and then they're going to think, oh, I'm a failure. And no, you worked your ass off. You busted your ass. The problem was is you didn't make any sustainable habits at the end of the day, and so you basically fucked any long-term progress.
Yeah. You know, obviously, you went straight to the, you know, the fat loss questions. Of course, yeah, yeah. And the one that gets me if I lifted as much as you do, then I'd blah 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 blah. And you go, yeah, but you don't. And yeah, you know, you did 3 sessions in the last 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's you know, you have no idea what it's like to be training, and the thing is with me and Nick and you know, the guys I train with, it's automatic. Yeah, that's what we do. You know, 4 times a week, where and you know, sometimes you know an extra bit here and there as well. We lift, and when we lift hard. We don't arse around. You know. You're comparing your session on the elliptical trainer to me doing 15 sets of deadlifts with 90% plus weights. Yep. It doesn't compare. It does not compute. Yep. You know, you
absolutely,
really have
it
no
does
idea.
Not compare. Relatively, it might. We probably don't have to work as hard to get into the gym as beginners do. Not nearly. I mean, for us, it's automatic. It takes no effort or almost no effort most of the time to get our asses into the gym, whereas a beginner, that can be a very, very friggin' hard thing to do. So yeah, just getting that habit in place, you know, and we had to go through that in the beginning as well, you know, actually just forming the habit of going to work out, whether or not, you know, it's the best session ever or not, it doesn't matter. You've got to get your ass in the gym to have anything happen. So.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Anyway, sorry, rant over, but I knew that Nick would we'll on to that. Actually, you used a phrase there, Nick, which maybe we should expand upon a little bit, and that's the set point.
Ah, set point.
Do you want to talk about set point for a couple of minutes?
Sure, yeah. Set points in general, obviously a lot of random tangents hadn't planned on talking about, but there's certain things like your genetic set points, and then there are things like your habitual set point. So, like, genetically, that's not going to change a lot. You might hear a lot of people throwing around, you know, changes in gene expression, which are true, but really, essentially, those are the result of a change in your behavior. So you might have a new behavioral set point, like, I've developed the habit of exercising, so that's going to change my body in a permanent way, as long as I keep up the exercise, you know, as long as that part of my life is permanent. Whereas genetically, you know, there are people that are responders to, say, cardio or strength training or various types of diets and so forth. They might respond much better to different things than other people. There are the non-responders, the people who have a moderate response and then a few high. You know, it's a bell curve, right? But yeah. In general, set point, when I was talking about there was in fat loss, you know, I go to the States every year, and this is just one of my it's a very rough gauge, but I see how much weight I gain living like an absolute yeah. heathen or a glutton. You know, it's I go there and it's you know, gluttony, but you know, I have certain habits that keep on improving each year, so I gain less and less, and my body composition keeps on getting better and better. And it's primarily because my habits are very, very different. You look at me, you know, what would it be now? Say 10 years ago, when I was just yeah. a big tubby tub. My habits, I was a completely different person. I mean, a lot of the same characteristics are there. The genetic code did not change, but in terms of how I move my body, how I eat food, how I relate to food, how I relate to people, how I relate to my environment, how I sleep, you know, all these things are completely different. So
yeah.
my
yeah.
set point, essentially, what I'm talking about is, for me, functioning on an automatic basis, I walk around much stronger and much leaner than I used to be. And as yeah. you know, improve yourself, your set point is going to change. So you're going to automatically be in a better place as long as you are making changes that are sustainable.
You could kind of encapsulate it by saying, if your physical potential for a given task is at, say, let's say your physical potential for the bench press is at 5 out of 10 now, right? And 10 out of 10 would be the best you could ever, ever achieve if, you know, the stars were in alignment and there was no fucking vernal equinox. Yeah. Right, so that's a 10, and you're at a 5 now. If you incorporate the stretch zone and change your behavior, so you go from, say, benching twice a week to 3 times a week, intelligently, not just chucking something in, but planning it in, then you might then stretch. You see what I'm doing here, Nick?
Yep.
Stretch zone. You might stretch to a 6, so your set point has moved from a 5 to a 6. But that's still your set point. And the whole thing about the stretch zone is changing that set point, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a, you know, people talk about it like a dynamic tension thing. But, like, if you take a rubber band and you stretch it out, you know, when you're first starting exercise and stuff, you're probably at, like, a 0 or a 1. You know, you can't do a whole lot. And, you know, you try to pull that rubber band too quick, too fast, it's just going to snap and you're not going to get it go anywhere. But if you, you know, you pull it a little bit, you're fine. You've got some tension. It's a little uncomfortable, but, you know, you're going to progress. And eventually you become a 2. And at 2, there's going to be no stretch at all. And so now you got to stretch that band a little bit again in order to get up to a 3. And basically you're just got to keep on challenging yourself. It's never too much. I mean, you get all the way to a 10 with small stretches in the band. It's not like you work really, really hard and suddenly you're at a 10. It takes, I think for, like, Soviet lifters and stuff, I mean, they focus on technique for like 20 years before they really, really start pushing it for world records and stuff. So, like, imagine 20 years of practice. Where are you going to be in 20 years? Do you even think 20 years ahead? You know, most people don't. But I realized when I first started training in Korea, I read Tom Venuto's Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle. I think it was that book that kind of got me in the mindset of, oh, I need to be doing this for a long time, and if I make a change, it has to be, you know, as a lifelong change. And if I don't have my head in the right, you know, mindset there, I'm just going to do a short-term effort and not get anything in the long run. And so I saw other lifters, that people who've been lifting it for 10 years plus, and I went, I want to have that kind of a body, lifting 10 years plus. And guess what? I'm at about year 8 right now, and I'm about where I wanted to be at year 10. So I'm ahead of where I wanted to be, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, I knew it would take 10 years to get there, and I've been going the whole time. I don't think a lot of other people have that kind of long-term mindset, but that's how you just stretch it a little bit at a time, and then it's never too hard. You know, it doesn't
exactly
break you.
I think we're kind of throwbacks, Nick, and maybe it's the training that eventually makes you like that. Yeah, you see that changes happen normally. You get some massive changes once in a while, but normally it's pretty slow. And that becomes the way of the world. It's not instant gratification. It is slow and it's hard work, but that is, after a while, you sort of understand that is the way it is. There's that great, you know, Jim Bender quote about, you want to be big and strong, lift heavy, eat well, sleep, repeat for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you said 10 years as well. He's not really that far off, is he?
No.
Anyways. Okay. So there's also, with any, you know, we've kind of gone on to it here. You know, what's the cost of being big and strong? Train hard, eat, sleep for 10 years. For all that, there's the obvious one, which is the time cost to that. 10 years is a long time. You know, we're talking out of the average Western, shall we say, or but that's very Western centric of me, isn't it, Nick? Considering that I think life expectancy in Korea is or South Korea, is one of the highest, and North Korea is one of the lowest.
Yep, and a neighbor, good friend,
which is quite tragic in many ways. But we'll say life expectancy in the developed world is sort of in the 80s now. But if we take it at 80, so 10% is what, 10 years is 12% of your life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's 12% of the best years of your life as well. Yeah. That's a big investment. That is huge. Yeah. In fact, there's not many that could be bigger.
Yeah, there's a huge list of benefits, though, obviously, with it, at least with the strength training bits. The cardio, oh. there are definitely some good aspects there as well. But yeah, strength training is amazing for just about everything.
Did you hear how Nick spat that out? There's some benefits to cardio at all.
Well, there are.
Gritty teeth. You're awful, Nick. Nick Ritchie, I do declare you're awful.
Well, the thing, there's a time and a place for it. Usually the time is when you haven't eaten yet, and it helps you burn a little extra fat, and the place is outside. So you walk for 30 to 45 minutes, maybe an hour if you're really gung-ho about it, and that's about the cardio that's good for you. And I think that's what most of your doctors are going to tell you as well. Go for a 30-minute walk, 5 days a week or whatever. And,
World Health Organization, 30 minutes or more for most, preferably all days.
I do that, though. I do that every day. So, as much as I whine about cardio, it's just the problem is I just posted a quote, or maybe it hasn't been posted yet, but it was Martin Burke, and I stole something around and something that he said, and it was something along the lines of, most people will get up, they'll go to the gym, they'll spend an hour doing, some cardio on the machine, and then they'll down like a juice smoothie afterwards, therefore wasting 2 hours of their life. Just completely wasting 2 hours of their life. It's like you get up and you do fasting cardio, and then you put a check, you've just completely unwound any kind of positive benefit you've done. And it's pretty stupid. And he says, much better, sleep an extra 2 hours, feel better, get a little bit of extra fat burn, and don't have the damn shake. It's just stupid. So anyway, my thing with cardio is that so many people abuse it, thinking it's going to make them better, and then being surprised when it doesn't, get them to their goals. So it's not cardio per se. Yeah, it's not the cardio. It's the fact that people whine about not being able to lose fat loss when they're doing stupid stuff that doesn't help with fat loss.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the disconnect.
But Nick, it's healthy. I can hear him. He's about to erupt.
Yeah, there's a little smoke coming out of my ears right now. Burning the rest of the water that's in left, that's residual from the ear infections. Oh, boy.
Yeah, but the time cost is there. I wouldn't say, I think 10 years, Jim Vendler is a world-class power lifter. He was a running back for Arizona State when he was there. So he's been he's been elite in two sports. You could say college football is elite / bordering on elite, I suppose. It's not professional. But as he says, I was on ESPN. So yeah, good on you, Jim. His idea of achievement is probably skewed towards the high end. Whereas when we talk about for the drug free guy or girl wanting to look better and be strong, most guys would be happy with say a 140 kilo bench press, a 180 squat, a 210, 220 deadlift, 110 kilo press, and they'd look pretty damn good if their body fat levels are in line. That's probably achievable. We're probably looking more along 5 years. And obviously this is hugely variable depending on so many things, but you can make some pretty amazing changes. You could become almost superhuman like probably within 3 years compared to your former peer group. Obviously your peer group would change because because you're a different person now. You're now superhuman. But so the cost benefit, it sort of depends on what your goal is, but as far as time is concerned, obviously effort. Now, the whole thing about effort, it's intelligent application of effort. It's not about killing yourself in the gym. It's about doing appropriate amounts of work. And it's interesting, actually. There's a friend of mine who he's moved out of the area, unfortunately, but Pete came to Darkside a few times, and I used to chat to him. He's an old martial arts friend of mine, and his deadlift was sort of stuck around. He's quite a slight guy, but his deadlift was about 120 for several years. And he'd train hard, he'd go to the gym, and he'd put 100 kilos on the bar, and he'd do it 8 times, and his head would almost pop off, and he'd half kill himself. He always had a good work ethic, even when we did martial arts together. Mm-hmm. And he came to Darkside for about 3 or 4 times, got 140-kilo deadlift, and he went, the thing that amazes me is how easy it was to do. I wasn't killing myself. I was just training smart. And I went, yeah, that's the whole purpose.
Yeah.
Train smart. Don't kill yourself.
And
that's, yeah, go on.
I would just like to meditate on that point for about half an hour.
Now, yeah, having said this, though, obviously, the vast majority of people, you know, you talk about what people need. Do they need the rein or the whip? Most people need the whip. Most people shy away from hard work. But Pete, because as a kid, he did martial arts with another friend of mine, Dante, who trains at Darkside. Yeah, we used to train like dogs. He had this incredible work ethic, and he needed just a little bit of the rein. He needed to be held back. No, Pete, just do 3 at 1:30. But I can do 5. I don't care. Just do 3 at 1:30. All right. Okay. Now we're going to go 1:40. Lift it. Oh, shit. I lifted it. Yes, you did. Because you didn't kill yourself on the way up.
Yeah. I think that's actually probably pretty common with a lot of people who stick with martial arts because they've got the sticking power. Martial arts, yeah. If you're doing one that kind of matters, it's probably going to hurt. That actually works, right?
Yeah.
It's probably going to hurt a bit. And, you know, those are two really important qualities for lifting weights. It's just you got to be smart about it and not have the martial artist mentality of never give up kind of a thing. You can bench press 40 kilos all day, but that's not going to make you stronger. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's sort of looking at both sides of the effort equation. So it's intelligent effort. It's not just, you know, screaming your head off and, you know, with your mates screaming at you, the cheerleaders as opposed to the coaches, going nuts. It's about, okay. And sometimes, Nick, as you know full well, when it's not there, sometimes you just go, okay, I'm just going to do 3 or 4 triples with this, you know, rather than push it to a max, because it's on that particular day, you know, vernal fucking equinox, whatever it is, it's not there for you.
Yep.
Okay. I think now for a bit of good news, and that is financial. What's the financial outlay in all this? Well, obviously you could talk about, yeah, someone like Nick. What could Nick be doing in the time that he's in the gym? Well, he could probably develop several other websites and sell some products in goodness knows what. Was it black hat marketing, Nick, you talk about and all that sort of stuff? You probably have time to do more of that sort of
Sure. I could put up 100 fun articles on a fresh blog and throw AdSense up on there and do that during the gym session, yeah, and have, you know, several hundred articles a week, but they wouldn't be any good. So we don't do that.
You could. Yeah, we don't, you know, being the skeptic's guide to strength, muscle, and fitness, we don't often talk about, you know, woo subjects like, oh, it's good for your soul, but, you know, weight training's good for your soul. And it keeps you from doing bad things on the internet. we're just kidding. But yeah, the financial thing is nothing really. Okay, it's a gym membership, or okay, with me it's been building a gym in my back garden, but it doesn't have to be that extreme. Even if you have a home gym, it can be done quite cheaply. You get a few friends involved, and you know, get them to put a little bit in a pot each time they come in, and then you can reinvest that, and before you know it, you've got a good little club thriving. It doesn't cost a lot of money, weightlifting belt, and obviously some of you will be saying, well, there is an extra food expense. That's debatable though, Nick, isn't it? Really, these days, I know a couple of years ago I said, oh yeah, probably is a extra food expense. You need to really whack the protein in. I'm not even sure about that anymore.
Yeah, the thing is with the protein, the problem is the diminishing returns. I mean, if you are bulking, I think if you're trying to do like a lean bulk especially, I think there's something to be said about having a whole bunch of that coming from protein most of the time. But, you know, if you're just cutting down and you're just trying to maintain your muscle and not really make a whole bunch of new muscle, then, yeah, from what I've read, and my conclusion anyway, is about a third of your body weight in pounds, you know, is all you need for keeping that muscle mass. You know, your body can only, I think it can only synthesize a few grams an hour, and if you just extrapolate that to a 24-hour period, you're not looking at a whole lot of protein unless you're using a bunch of drugs or somehow absorbing more than you're supposed to, or your body really needs it. If you're, you know, in a major caloric deficit and all you're eating is protein, then obviously it's going to be, you're going to be using some of that protein for energy. But, you know, if you're having the other macronutrients, then really your protein requirements aren't that high.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And even if you sort of go with the idea that bodybuilders have almost encouraged their body to assimilate more protein than the average person, if you're talking, say, an extra 50%, it's still only a few grams an hour more than the average person.
Yep.
So maybe the whole thing of super huge amounts of protein is the one thing I would say that I notice is it really sort of blunts my appetite.
Oh, you bet.
So I'm less, if I have a couple of protein shakes through the day, I'm less likely to go hunting for something I shouldn't be, as in sugar or high fat or normally sugar, to be honest.
And if you're chewing your meat, that's going to blunt your hunger even more. If you've got like a bunch of salmon steaks just in Tupperware and you eat that stuff instead of a shake, my goodness, you're not going to be hungry at all.
There you go. Yeah, I had a pack of chicken yesterday and that was enough. That was all I needed for an 11-hour shift. That was it. So the financial side of it, I think there is a financial side, but you definitely don't need, as we discussed last week in the July August review show, when we talked about the supplement guide by examine.com. You pretty much don't need supplements. if you are going to have supplements, maybe some, if you're into increasing muscle mass, you might go with a good whey powder, some creatine. Oh, there you go. That's a lot of money right there.
Yeah.
Even the amount I have, that's probably about 30 or 40 pounds a month. It's not really a huge amount. You don't need the pro hormones. You don't need, you don't really need, the expensive, nitrous oxide, if that's what it is. I don't know. The NO2, that sort of stuff, the premium creatine supplements. It's just not needed. Not needed at all. So when you're putting a plan together or when you're executing the plan, the cost of time, effort and financial means is all to be factored in. Something I often hear runners say, oh, all you need is to buy a pair of running shoes. And then I sort of think in the back of my mind, and to cope with the frustration of being injured a lot of the time and the sheer boredom of the amount of time. Yeah, we talk about, Nick, don't we? Russ was saying a couple of weeks ago to me that he asked Mike Tauscher if it was normal that he's training about 10 hours a week. And Mike replied, I train about 3 hours each day. I train, so about 12 hours a week.
Yeah.
But then you get a lot of, I know people who train for distance running And they'll do 10 hours of running a week. Easy.
Yeah.
And for most of you, you don't need 10 hours of lifting a week. 3-4 hours of lifting a week is plenty. You can achieve. Yeah. If we talk about your physical potential on that set point stretch zone scale of, you're at a 2 or 3 now, you can probably get to 9.5 training 4 hours a week out of 10. The extra, getting to 9.7, 9.8, you never get to 10, obviously. But, getting that 9.7, 9.8, then you might need the extra time. But to get to a damn good level, you don't need much more than, say, 3-4 hours a week, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there. Or maybe a 9 out of 10. Or for me, I'd say maybe. I mean, I can get strong real quick, but it takes a lot. I mean, it's the whole diminishing returns thing. So, I mean, I've got to do a lot more training. I've got to eat a lot more. You know, if you're going like the big route, then yes, that's going to be a lot more expensive. You want to put on 20 pounds of muscle and keep it there, and it isn't there right now. You know, that's a lot of eating. That's a whole lot of eating, and a good amount of training as well. So that's going to cost a lot more financially and time-wise. But if you're just going the strength route or the fat loss route, you know, those don't have to be expensive or take too much time. But bodybuilding, I think, is always going to be expensive, relatively.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, if you're talking about someone who wants to get to the top, then obviously you're looking at quite expensive drugs, and unless you have some serious sponsorship, you're going to have a hard time affording that sort of stuff. You're going to need a good job to support you if you're taking growth hormone and IGF-1 and insulin and all that sort of stuff. And obviously then you look at, there's one cost benefit we've missed off, Nick, and that's health. How dare we? How dare I, actually? I put this together mainly.
What a negative term.
yes. Health can be a nebulous term, but if you talk about health as being the absence of disease and the body operating optimally, then obviously the prolonged use of performance enhancing drugs does have an effect on that. If you're going to go that route, let's say you get a drug-free, a guy who's drug-free who weighs 70 kilos, so 154 pounds, and through intelligent drug-free training, his weight goes up to 200 pounds. That is a big increase. That's a 45-pound increase in muscle mass. If they're using drugs, weight go up to 250 pounds, and that extra 50 pounds puts an amazing extra stress system.
Yeah, you bet.
So, it's a whole, you know, it's orders of magnitude we're talking of. Okay, should we talk about one of your old favourites, Nick? And I remember you being quite surprised when you found out I'd heard of this. When we're talking about preparing for achieving. Oh, sounds quite zen, doesn't it? But we have this whole cycle of change we go through, and our old friends Prochaska and Di Clemente had their model of change, didn't they? Do you want to say a few words about that, buddy?
Not a whole lot. It's interesting to know. I mean, originally I had created audio and video on the change process, talking about the Prochaska Norcross and the Clemente model of change. I don't have it in the Earn Your Carbs videos now, and I guess it's still a good book to read, but it's kind of interesting to know that everybody kind of goes through the same things, where you have the six stages, which are pre-contemplation, where you're not even really aware of it, of the change you might want to make. Like for my fat loss, I really didn't, I mean, I knew I was always kind of fat and stuff, but I really didn't think about changing it for a very long time. But eventually I got into the second stage, which is contemplation, where you're thinking, maybe I could lose some weight here. And then there's preparation, so I actually decide to start taking some action, and so I kind of get ready for that. That's the third stage. And then the fourth stage is action, where I actually do something about it. So, I mean, you're not actually doing something about it until you're in the fourth stage. And then after that, you know, you keep it up, and the fifth stage is maintenance. So you take action, you get some good results, and you learn how to maintain that so the gains don't go away. And then there's the sixth stage, which is termination, you know, kind of going, where am I going to be going from here? What kind of tweaks do I want to make so that it's more sustainable? Do I want to do more? Do I want to do less? But, you know, kind of lifelong, how is this going to fit into how I live? And there's a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, happens at each stage of the process that can send you back to an earlier stage, or, you know, if you do all the things right, you can move on to the next one. So anyway, it's just, it's an interesting framework for understanding how we all go through change. But you put it here for a reason. Did you want to have, say something else about that?
It's really, I just wanted to make a point that that people listening to this are really going to be in the, obviously, if you're pre-contemplation, you're not even thinking about it. You might be in the planning to act, or in the action stages already, or maybe just contemplating. If you come across this and you're in that contemplation stage, then good on you. You're gonna take away a lot of the of the crap that you'd probably be in if you're looking for the easy route out, because we don't offer the easy route out. We just offer the results route out. But yeah, most of the people who go to Get Mighty Now and listen to the Mighty Cast are probably in the action stage, and they're looking at making their efforts as pointed and as targeted as possible. Okay. Should we talk about the, this is a point you added, Nick, the 1 year objective, and the obvious thing, this is the great thing, I often miss the bleeding obvious, is to work backwards. So it's 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. It's all a process, isn't it, Nick?
You bet. This is something that I've done several times, and often I won't really think about what I'm doing because I just know exactly what I need to do to get where I want to go. So, like, with Earn Your Carbs, sadly, I'm behind my schedule here, but I have a – here's another thing about your goals. Generally, you don't want to tell people what your goal is, because that gives you kind of a little mental boost, and it allows you to feel good about yourself for having a goal. So you're less likely to achieve it if you tell everybody about it. Unless, of course, you have some kind of public accountability. Yeah. Like, generally, if you have, like, a specific goal, you don't tell people. That's why, like, I say I have my goal, but nobody knows what it is for 1 year from now, because I'm not going to reveal that until a year's gone by. But anyway, you take, say, let's say it's a one-year goal. You say, okay, I want to achieve this by 1 year from now. Maybe let's just go with, say, we'll just go with a number like 60 pounds of fat loss. That would be crazy. But let's just say you want to do that, 60 pounds of fat loss. Then how many pounds do I need to lose per month, right? And that's going to be, oh, shit, 5 pounds a month, right? So then this month I have to lose 5 pounds. How much do I have to lose this week? Well, 1.25 pounds, right? And what kind of caloric deficit do I need to make on a daily basis to lose a pound for this week, you know? And so then you go back and you work out your calories, and that's the deficit you need to be hitting every single day, without fail, on the nose, in order to get where you want to be in a year. And now you could say, well, we have a little bit of flexibility here, you know, we can count on a weekly basis, you know, and we can have some good weeks and some bad weeks, and so we adjust for that. But the main thing is that you've got a plan, and you know you have checkpoints all the way along. You've got your daily checkpoint. Did I do that? End of the week, did I hit my weekly goal? End of the month, did I hit my monthly goal? And then, you know, it's on to the next day, week, and month, you know. And each day you know exactly what you need to be doing to get to where you want to be. And that way it's no surprise. You know, you get to your goals, and it just seems kind of it's not really that exciting, because it's taken a lot of time, but you've deliberately been doing what you need to do every single day that you need to do it. And so it's not a question of, will I get to my goals? It's just, well, how long has it been, and how much time is left, and eventually you get there. You know, of course there may be some setbacks and you've got to readjust, but, you know, it's a whole lot. It's not really surprising. It's like, oh, I didn't know I could run a marathon. Well, if you plan it out correctly and, you know, you have the capability to do this stuff, it's not that surprising that you can train yourself for a marathon or a powerlifting competition or a certain level of body fat. You know, there's nothing magical about it. It just takes a lot, you know, doing the right thing every day for a long time to get you to where you need to be.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And obviously, if running a marathon were that hard, 37,000 people every year wouldn't do the London Marathon. Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
They're good. The insurance athletes are going to be hating on me again. Oh, they
I didn't plan cardio there. That was you. That was all you, buddy. Oh, the damn thing is, right, that these people, they'll go out and they'll run their marathon, or a lot of them will run their marathon, and they'll just completely get deconditioned, and their beer belly will come out, and they'll, you know, feel like a sloth, you know, after patting themselves on the back and drinking too much. And basically, you look at them 3 months later, and they're injured, and they're fat, and they're just pathetic. Sorry, but most of, I mean, a large number of them are just pathetic most of the year. You know, whereas I'll go through my hedonism for, you know, like a month, which is pretty bad. I'll look bad for a month or two afterwards, but still, that's really different. I'm not, you know, I think it's a little tiny bit better. I don't want to say that I'm better, but, you know, come on, like 9 months out of the year versus like 3 months, it's pretty bad. I'm sure lots of people critique me for having my off track, though, too. But
there's many people who go to the gym and do lifting programs who backslide as well. I don't think we can really really point the finger in that way.
You're right.
Can I go on an absolute tangent, Nick?
Now that I've dug myself a grave, it's your turn.
My turn. It's my turn to have people switching off. But we're sitting here on a Sunday morning doing the podcast, and when Nick goes on a rant, I'm sort of, I don't know. I'm not concentrating as I should. I'm flicking through channels and on some TLC channel, right? There's Oprah Winfrey. Here we go. And she's interviewing someone called Caroline Miss, right? And it says, intuition, power and grace. A spiritual teacher believes everyone can fulfill their own sacred contract. A set of tasks the soul is meant to achieve. Oh my goodness. That, what a pile of crap. Sorry. Click, click, click. Everyone's turning off.
Yeah, when you get that kind of foo-foo nonsense, you know, good on you for running a marathon, because that's a lot better than listening to some guru that's like, believe in the mystical powers of the positive mind and hug trees and buy my supplements.
Yes. Buy my book. It's good for the soul. Oh, piss off. These people, and this absolute harridan Oprah Winfrey, how does she get such high-profile people sort of going, oh, she's so good, she's this, she's that, she's just a shill,
you know,
for
what
the
it is.
Pseudoscience
industry. They got publicity from her show, and so they're just, you know, saying, yeah, she's cool, invite me back on the show, that made me lots of money. That's all it is.
Oh, it's just hideous, Nick. Sorry. Yeah, so slight aside there, yeah, Sunday's always a good day for that, because obviously you got all the church services going on and stuff like that, and any old crazy cult which comes along can get on cable TV these days. But answering the big questions. Yeah, this.
Well,
this,
I think okay. So we said, you know, marathon runners are much better than, you know, foo-foo people. Oprah Winfrey, I would say, is better than the TV and evangelical preachers. So let's just have our hierarchy here.
I don't know. I think she's as much. Probably does more damage. I can't think of a
media person
with high profile.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone who's high profile in the media. Yeah. She, and you don't get many more high profile than her, who has done as much damage over the years. I really can't think of anyone off the top of my head. You know, she's introduced us to people like, obviously there's the complete witch, Tracy Anderson, who has had time on her show.
Oh.
Right? There's Dr. Oz and Dr. Phil and various other doctors who have had time on her show. I don't even watch her show and I'm aware of this. Obviously I don't watch her show.
Honey Boo Boo on the Learning Channel. Honey Boo Boo, good American programming. After I saw the South Park episode, I had to watch an episode. The Learning Channel is such a terrible name for that channel. It's so misleading.
The irony, really?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh dear. Anyway, so we better get back on subject here. Sure. So, yeah, no, that was going back to the working backwards. So you have your daily objectives, which then kick on to your weekly objectives, which, you know, eventually will culminate in a life goal, I guess you could say.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this case, a year goal, you know, for example
you had, yes, absolutely. And all along the way, obviously, you're getting feedback and you're seeing what the outcome is. Every action has an outcome. It's just a case of, is that outcome a desired outcome or not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I put £2 on this week. That's the outcome. Okay. Now, was I sticking to my diet? Well, I stuck to my diet for a couple of days, and then I had that pack of Krispy Kreme donuts, and then I had this, and then I had that. Okay. Right. I think we can identify where you went wrong, and you can take action to correct it.
Exactly.
And sorry, you know, me and my behavioral change 101 kicking in here. I do apologize, Nick. It's on a much lower level than Nick operates, but if the outcome isn't desired, then one of two things has to change. You either have to change your behaviors or change your goal.
Yep.
Okay. If your goal is to, should we stick with running a marathon?
Sure.
And you didn't increase your mileage this week, from, 3 miles because you're really at the early stages to 3.5 miles because you're running a marathon next year. If you didn't increase your long run by that amount this week, then either you need to change your behaviors and make sure that you get back on plan and increase your distance, or you need to change your goal. Maybe a 5 kilometer fun run is more your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah, behavioral change 101 there. We're going to talk a bit more about action now, aren't we?
Yeah. So this is called the stretch zone. So your first point is?
Oh, you want me to talk about it, do you? Don't be comfortable for too long. Absolutely. Nick, when you, let's take a lift you did. I'm thinking about, yeah, some of the training you did with me all those years ago. I remember you getting, I think, a 230 deadlift. Yeah, I remember you getting 500 pounds, I think. Is that right?
230, I think, was the best deadlift I ever hit in London. Yep.
Yes, that would be right. Okay, so 230 is a good deadlift, right? So it's not a great deadlift. It's not elite. But it's, you know, it's 500 pounds.
Well, I just did that yesterday with stuff left in the tank and weighing 20 kilos less.
Oh, there you go. there's progress.
A little better over time, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at one point you were around the 250 mark, weren't you?
255, yeah, but I was 10 kilos heavier than I am right now.
Yeah, okay. So 230... Nick was building up, and how long were you satisfied with that, with hitting the 230 for, Nick?
Oh, about
you got
a second.
That fuzzy feeling.
Yep, I was satisfied for about a second. Nice. What's the next one?
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I think people who I often say to quite high achievers. I work with a lot of high achievers. You know, there's a reason they can afford to be members of the gym I work at, because it's not cheap. And that's because they're high achievers. And I often have to say, look, you've got to appreciate how far you've come, because they always go, okay, done that. What's next?
Yeah.
And, you know, in regards to the stretch zone, it's about, okay, what's the next goal? And you sort of think in an intelligent way, you go, okay, well, next time I'll do, you know, my one, or let's say you're doing 230 for a double, right? And you're doing it to a, with a rep left in the tank. So you could do three. Okay. And you sort of think, okay, next time this happens, I want to get 235 for a double with a rep in the tank.
Yep.
Yeah. Or if you're more specific, next comp, let's say you've done it in competition, next comp, obviously the goal is to add 5 kilos to that lift.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's about a realistic increase as well. We get back to, you know, don't be unrealistic.
Yeah, it's, just a quick point on that, right? So high achievers will often, yeah, do achievement hopping, and that's fine. Just the main thing is, you know, don't miss the, I can't remember which author it was, but some author that I was reading said something really good about this, which was enjoy your plateaus. You know, this is a new challenge, a new puzzle to figure out. You know, figure it out. Work your ass off to figure it out, but enjoy the process, you know, and you know, that's the whole, it's not the destination, it's the journey kind of a thing. But heck, I want to get to my destination and then find another cool destination, right?
So,
yeah. But plateaus aren't anything to be feared. It's something that's a natural part of the thing, and it's a new puzzle to figure out and get past and enjoy the process and then feel good about achieving it and then move on to the next puzzle, you know. And I think that's just kind of a good way to go.
Absolutely. It's, you do have to appreciate what you've done, and I'm at that stage now, unfortunately, where I'm probably not going to be able to lift in competition again, but it doesn't mean I'm done. I've got to set my goals in a different way towards different lifts, but you do have to appreciate what you've done once in a while. Don't just sort of go, no, that was rubbish. I'm not quite as rubbish as I was, but that was rubbish. And I've heard people say, oh, that was a PR, but it was a rubbish PR. There's no such thing as a rubbish PR. Dan, who trains with us at Dark Side.
Yeah.
Dan, a PR's always good. Okay.
Eventually, so they're going to be a little harder to come by.
Yeah. Exactly. So the next section, sorry about this, listeners, the dog's going nuts. I wish he'd just get in and shut them up.
Yeah. You want to pause for a minute?
Yeah, can we pause for a sec?
Yep. Pause.
Thanks,
mate.
Take a
pee-pee break. Yep.
All right, mate. Hey, Nick, you there, buddy?
Hello, hello? Hello? Hello?
Hey, Nick, you back yet?
Hey, I'm back.
Oh, fantastic. Sorry about that. One of the guys who's training 11 is here already. It's 10 past 10.
Ah, I gotcha.
Oh, there's no traffic. He travels for miles, so...
Okay.
Yeah, he travels further than you, mate.
Wow.
All right, shall we... I think we're on intelligent effort. Just about to go into that.
Okay, yep, sounds good.
Is that all right? And I'll put you on the spot about that, because that's
intelligent effort.
Most of this is your stuff,
Cool.
All right, buddy.
All right, here we go. We'll resume in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, and the next step we're talking about in our action section is applying intelligent effort. So we don't run off like a headless chicken in any direction, Nick, no?
Yeah. I guess the two main points, as I talk about in the Earn Your Carbs videos, are at least the two things I like to use are massive action and Kaizen. So, I mean, yeah. Most people, when they come to me saying, I want to lose some fat, you know, they're like, well, let's do it. I really want to work super duper hard, you know, for like a month or something. You know, okay. You know, let's use that enthusiasm and that effort, you know, and funnel it well, because you can make some good gains in a month, some good progress. But, you know, massive action is by definition a temporary thing. So are we making some sustainable habits along the way as well, so that you don't just, you know, do some kind of like a yo-yo diet? I mean, that's all yo-yo diets are. It's massive action without any kind of positive habit formation in the process. So, like, if I have somebody doing, like, ultra low carb on non-training days for a month, and then they're having carbs after their workout and maybe a few before. You know, when we come back off of that, you know, they're going to still be going ultra low carb, you know, at least a couple days of the week or something, so that, you know, they're going to be staying a little bit leaner and they're not eating as much junk food and stuff. So we'll try to put something in place that's a little more lasting. You have all that enthusiasm, by all means go the massive action route. But more long-term sustainability-wise, I like to just have like one thing to focus on for a month, you know, and to slightly improve. So it might be, you know, keeping a food log. If you're dieting and you need to count calories and, you know, you've done your stuff, you've got all these great habits in place, but you want to lose more fat and you're not keeping a food log and counting calories, you got to start that food log. And that's just like a big hang-up for a lot of people. And so, you know, you might just say, hey, one day a week, log your food. Or if it's, you know, easy enough for the person, you know, every single morning, log your food. That's all you got to log. Just log breakfast. That's all you got. And then after a month, you have them log lunch too. And after another month,
yes.
It might take three months to get in, you know, your daily food log. But at least that way it's not scary for people and the habit actually gets established. Whereas most people, they try to log all their food every day. They might do it for 3 or 4 days, and then they stop sending you food logs because they tried to do too much too quickly and it wasn't sustainable. So that's where the Kaizen thing, the small continuous improvements, comes in.
Yeah.
It's much better to be logging it every single day, doing a little tiny bit, you know, one meal a day, than to do it for a week and then stop.
Yeah, absolutely. It's creating that habit. And I suppose you could say, you know, the whole decision to exercise or to drop body fat or to run a marathon, whatever it will be. You know, we keep going back to running a marathon, don't we? That's kind of a massive action in itself. But within that, you can have big improvements. You know, I often say with lifting, you kind of want to take the improvements when they're on offer. If you're having a good day, take advantage of it. But you also have to remember you're quite vulnerable at that time. If your best deadlift, for example, is 160 kilos, then at that sort of level, maybe you could get 170 kilo pull and you'll be okay. If that goes up, I'd say you're probably done there. Normally it'll be 160, 162, 165, 167, 170. It'll take you four extra sessions to get to that 170. But you're also more likely to injure yourself the bigger you jump.
Sure.
So if your structures are conditioned for 160 kilo deadlift and you're going to hit a PR, then 162 is probably within you. 170 might be, you might get away with it. 175, 180, you could pull something because your structures aren't in place at that stage. So it's about doing, you know, what you can. Obviously, if it's all on the line and there's a, you're in a competition and it's, you know, you got this lift for, you know, like Nick had for qualification, for the national championships. Then you just go for whatever you have to go for, and sod it. You know,
I had to lift like 255.
Yeah.
I had the darn thing, like my best gym lift, I think, was 230 there, right? But like I had the darn thing like an inch from lockout. I was just standing there, and he's looking at me,
yeah.
And he's like, no. But I was just like about to cry with the bar in my hands there, an inch from the top, and oh, that was a heartbreaker, Chris.
That was. I felt for you that day, mate. I really did. That was because you pulled it so well off the floor.
That was like a 10% jump. That was like a 10% jump in my deadlift from competition. Just the effect, right? Which I guess isn't so that's fairly common in some people. But God, still that.
I think it was those two attempts at that big deadlift, which he didn't quite get. But it was those that absolutely slaughtered you and made you sleep for, I don't know, the next week.
Yeah, the next 20 hours or whatever. Yeah, that's pretty nice.
The next section, adjustments along the way, I think we've probably done most of that. You know, you talk about...
One more thing about Kaizen, if I could, when it comes to training, because a lot of people don't have a training time. So, I mean, I talk about this in the In Your Carbs videos a little bit, but I don't really go into training. And that would just be to carve out, you know, to start off, carve out 5 minutes a day, you know, for whatever or start off with something that you can just, you know, it's your default training template. So whatever you can do on a regular basis, so it's no big sweat. That might be 20 minutes for some people. It'll be 5 minutes a day for other people. And, you know, just carve out that time and then, you know, a couple of weeks later, a month later, heck, it might be a few months later, add 5 minutes to it if you can. And, you know, just slowly get it so that, you know, you have the window to train in and then be training in it and then kind of, you know, do the best you can in that time. And that's how you would Kaizen the training if you just don't have, you know, 4 hours a week or 8 hours a week to train and your coach says it needs to be otherwise. You know, do what you can.
Well, I'm just thankful, Nick, you didn't go for the treadmill example you once insisted on using where you start at 1 kilometer per hour for 5 minutes.
Don't go out of your way to not do work. Kaizen doesn't mean lazy. It just means small incremental improvements. Improvement is the key word. If you walk at 5 miles an hour, going down to 4 miles an hour would be, but it is not an improvement.
Okay, so adjustments along the way. I think we kind of really did that with the 1 year objective, didn't we? But do you want to add anything to that? Oh, Yeah, instinctive training.
Oh, you have instinctive training. Yeah, there's
actually, that's what I put, isn't it? But then you added the 1 year objective, so it sort of covered most of that.
Yeah, so the instinctive training part. What did you have to say about that?
I was going to talk about how I never really liked the whole instinctive training thing for many people, and I still don't. I think if you're a beginner, just stick to the damn plan. You're not attuned enough yet to be able to instinctively train. But if you're an advanced lifter, I have to admit, I really do like the way that Michael Tautra has made the instinctive training almost a scientific element of training. And what I mean by that is he has a system where it's almost self-regulatory. I'm not going to give anything of his system away because that would be unfair of me. But just to give you an example of how it might work, if you're doing deadlifts, we're doing a lot of deadlifts today. If you're doing squats for 20 minutes and you hit your top weight, and let's say you're aiming to do 3 reps with another rep left in the tank, so we call that a 9 rate of perceived exertion, RPE, and then you have sort of another 12 minutes to go in a 20-minute zone to get as many sets as you can with 10% less weight than that. If you're feeling good that day, you're going to get 5 or 6 or even 7 sets at that weight. If you're not feeling good, you might only get 3. But that, I think, is truly, when I say 5, 6 or 7 sets compared to 3 sets, that's both with an extra rep left in the tank at least. So it's a 9 RPE or less. So you're not pushing it so that you've got a head buster with that, on that last set. That is truly instinctive training, because what you've done is you're regulating it for how energetic you are that day, how coordinated you feel that day, how aggressive you feel that day. All these little things come into it and determine whether you're going to get more or less workload. And even the whole RPE thing, on some days you're feeling strong, you build up to say a double in the overhead press with a certain weight. And the next time you might feel more attuned to it. You might feel better coordinated. You might feel able to push it a little bit further, and hence you get an extra 2.5 kilos. So his system is very self-regulatory, or we could say instinctive in the way it's done. Mine tends to be a bit more, okay, do this. Max effort is always slightly instinctive. I don't want people to miss, but it's still fairly instinctive. Yeah, but I also say there, follow the damn template, and for most people, when we're talking about the reactive training system method, which is Mike Tauscher's method, that's really for the top 1% of people who want to get as strong as humanly possible. It's not for most. Even the dedicated gym goer, probably the extra time that would take is probably more than they can afford, shall we say. Most of you, it's a case of follow the damn plan and use the default templates from time to time when time becomes scarce. Anything to add, Nick?
I just wanted to say that the fatigue drops and stuff, I've been finding more about that. I think it was I was reading a Lyle McDonald, is that his name? Lyle McDonald? I think so. Article that actually linked to Martin Birkin, who's one of my favorite diet guys. And he had linked to an article on the reverse pyramid structure and how he kind of uses that, where you basically warm up. I don't know what it's, because I was reading the Lyle McDonald articles on specific warm-ups, because I'm always looking at trying to shave off time with my workout but still get the same benefits. But the fun thing was there is with the reverse pyramid structure, you basically warm up. So I might have, like, say, what I'm going to try to test out is, like, 70%, 80% of the bar weight in my hands, and then immediately jump to 100% of, like, the top set for the day, roughly, when it's rep work. So maybe, like, a 4 or 5-plus rep range. And just jump immediately to your top set. And then what you do is a fatigue drop. So you go down, you know, 5, 10, or 15%. And then you basically go to no more reps in the tank, and then you do another fatigue drop a few minutes later, and you do that again. And then you basically adjust your weights based on how many reps you were able to achieve during your fatigue drops. And this was written about quite several years ago anyway. So there are a lot of other people that are, you know, using the fatigue drops as an indicator essentially for instinctive training. But, you know, if the reps in the fatigue sets go up quite a bit, then you might want to up your top weight. And so that's another way to kind of progress with it. So the instinctive training thing, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, if you've got some kind of way to quantify it, it can be really good if you're more of an advanced trainer, but beginners really need to just stick to the program.
The amount of times that a client or a lifter's general level of laziness will kick in around the normally in my programs, the second section. So when you're doing either timed hell or repeated heavy effort, or even, you know, some speed work sometimes, that they'll get to a certain amount of work or volume, and then it's sort of like, oh Lord, do I have to do this?
Yeah.
Yes. And with my programming, as it gets to a more advanced stage, I will say, okay, this and this, so section one and section two are set. Section three, where we do most of the assistance work, I might just put in 3 to 5 sets, 8 to 12 reps. So that's more, okay, if you're feeling tired, then that can be cut back. But these first sections, don't mess with it. And I think for most people, and probably, you know, if I was to put a percentage on, you know, 90 to 95% of you listening, don't mess with it too much. Just follow the damn plan. Sorry to be so, sorry to be so dogmatic, but follow the damn plan.
Yeah, there's the whole thing, which, you know, for the most part, you gotta master the basics first, and then you can get on to the customization. Yeah, but that mastery's got to be there first.
Yeah, you know, a little aside that I put on the plan here, but you probably got the idea from my rant a few minutes ago. The secret is wrong, okay? Well, I suppose it's wrong of me to say it's totally wrong, but just wishful thinking for stuff isn't gonna help you. You do have to act. Okay, so what's the number one thing you have to do, Nick?
Take action, get started.
there you go. We're sort of repeating ourselves a little bit here, but
I have some new stuff to add to this one, actually, for the getting started bit.
Wow.
Obviously there's the daily action, but you know, building on that, you know, you can always improve your process or clarity a bit later, and just kind of a few things. I mean, we already talked about a little bit, but are you doing the right thing? You know, like for fat loss, are you tracking calories? Because that's what fat loss is about. You know, strength, are you programming some kind of progressive overload so that you're actually lifting heavier weights to get stronger, you know? And, you know, muscle, are you eating enough? You know, like a lot of times, like you said earlier, you know, people will be doing, they'll want to be a power lifter, but then they also want to row 2,000 meters or something, you said, right? It's not related, you know? It's like, this is your main thing, have one goal, achieve that goal, and then get to choose another goal and achieve that goal, and, you know, just keep on doing that over and over, rinse and repeat.
I think what you said, Nick, when you were talking about Kaizen was most applicable here, is set aside the 20 minutes a day and do something, and then this really kicks in. You know, you've taken action, you've got the 20 minutes, and it might be going for a walk for 20 minutes. And then that 20 minutes of going for a walk might be 20 minutes of doing super heavy squats a year later. And what you've done is you've assessed, you've looked at what you're doing, you've assessed that it's not really specific to the goal you have, and you've refined the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it's all about, and that's what we do the whole time. You know, some of the stuff we're talking about in the last few weeks is very different to what we were talking about a year and a half ago when we started. Actually, it's a little bit longer than that when we started doing the Mighty Cast. But yeah, you know, we're refining our process as well, and that's the way it should be. If you listen back to episode 3 or 4, and we're saying exactly the same things, okay, you could say, oh yeah, he's talking about squats again. Yes, that's pretty. I doubt whether that's ever going to change. But some of the finer points could well change. And yeah, we have our process, but we're refining the details, aren't we?
Of course. And that's always going to happen as new research comes out, as you get more experienced, as you encounter setbacks. It's just a natural part of the process. You know, any yeah. guru who says, you know, listen to me, I know all the answers, you know, it's that's not true.
No one knows all the answers. Exactly. Well, you just mentioned dealing with setbacks there. You ready to go on to that section, Nick?
Yeah, in just a second, actually, because we're talking about getting started. And just one more thing that is really helpful is, it sounds like a really weak answer at first, but, you know, what's the easiest change you can make? Because that's probably going to be the most sustainable one you can make. And, you know, if you do that first, you know, then that's out of the way. What's the next easiest change? Eventually you get to some pretty damn hard changes once all the easy stuff's gone. But, you know, that's going to develop a really, really nice foundation for long-term sustainable results. So I think asking yourself, what's the easiest change you can make? You know, just set aside 5 minutes and go for a walk. Or just take 5 minutes to sit on the damn floor, change meditation time into squat time later, you know, just get that time carved out so you can work out and just keep on improving on it. So what would you think about that one, just making the easiest change you can make?
Well, I think it kind of depends on the person's personality. I think if you're a lot of the time, the easy, simple things don't spark enough emotion in people. And that's where, yeah, that's the difference between Kaizen and massive action. You know, I've often said, or I've said a lot recently to people that, yes, I'd be better off now if 30 years ago I'd trained for health, right? So if I'd sort of, yeah, when I did my heavy squat sessions, if I'd just built up to a set of 5 where I might have had another rep or two left and maybe progressed up to a stage where I could sort of do that for 150, 160 kilos, I might not be as messed up as I am now. But I don't think I'd have actually got into the gym doing that, Nick. It was getting 250 or more on my back and taking that for a ride that got me motivated. Yeah. It's, health, yes, I'd be better off if I'd done X, Y, Z, but, oh, it leaves me cold. But with other people, it's sort of, oh, well, yeah, that sounds good. And, you know, the ones who are sort of really sort of a little bit apprehensive, then the first, I think with absolute beginners, and especially with, you know, certain types of people, then those minute changes are definitely the way to go. But it's sort of, yeah, and then when they're ready to make a jump, then make the jump. As long as, oh, as I said earlier, you don't want to jump and hurt yourself. You want to jump and be able to then sustain that position and
stretch
move on
zone,
from there.
Not the snap zone. Yep. If
we go back to your stretch zone continuum, you might make, you know, go from a 5.5 in your lifetime potential in the overhead press to a 6 relatively quickly, and then in the same amount of time it might go 6.1, 6.2, 6.3. Right. It's that, and that's more the Kaizen improvement. But occasionally you can jump. You know, I hate to use this as an example, Nick, but when people start running on a treadmill, I say to them, okay, how easy was running for 5 minutes at 9 kilometers per hour? And they go, oh, it's dead easy. Okay. All right, next time do 9.5. And I say, how easy was 9.5? Oh, it's pretty easy. Okay, let's go 9.7. How easy? Oh, it's getting tough. Okay, it's getting tough. Let's do 9.8. Oh, that's pretty hard. Okay, do 9.8 next time. Yeah, this is very, very basic, mm-hmm. linear progression. I admit that life doesn't tend to work like this, but you might do 9.8 for 3 sessions and then go to 9.9, and you might do 9.9 for 10 sessions and then finally get to 10. So it you know, that's a combination of massive action and kaizen.
Yep.
And the higher the performance level, the more kaizen would kick in, and the more conservatively it would be applied as well. You know, I think a lot of the time we talk of kaizen as being, you know, slow, continual improvements. But
there
in
are
itself,
jumps. Kaizen, there are jumps, definitely.
Yes, yeah. In itself, though, kaizen can be applied conservatively and it within that reality in a more cavalier fashion.
Sure.
Yeah.
There are a lot of nuances.
Starting to bleed and obvious.
Yeah, no, but yeah, it's kind of important because I often come across as being too slow, too gradual and conservative with changes. But like if somebody says, hey, Nick, I want to do fat loss, usually they're telling me, Nick, it's a little too hard what I do recommend to them. So So the thing is, you know, you got to push, but you never know until you get feedback from the person, really. So I might be pushing too hard. You know, if they're like, Nick, I really want to go at it hard. And so I'm thinking hard in my mind is very different from what they're thinking in their mind oftentimes. Yeah. So I'm going, oh, this should be very manageable for them. And then they'll go, Jesus Christ, I can't do it. And then we'll adjust and make it easier. That's usually what happens. But that's why I try to always kind of err on the side of caution. Because, you know, we say, well, what can you do every day? You know, do that. Whatever you can do every day without fail, that's the hardest thing, you know, the hardest easy thing you can do, do that. And that's kind of like the happy medium there, because you don't want to hit that fear response and start procrastinating all that stuff, because you got to get started, you got to take action, but just do as much as you can, as long as you can keep it up, kind of
yeah.
The happy medium.
Yeah, it's I obviously I have to agree with you. There's also the expectation of the person, though, and we talked earlier about being unrealistic, mm-hmm. But that's where having a professional such as yourself or myself can be really beneficial. You know, I've often said, I said it today, you know, Russ is a fantastic weight caller in the gym. And pretty much whenever he's there, when it gets to a challenging weight, it will be, okay, what do you reckon, Russ? And we all look to Russ, and Russ says, Russ calls the weight. And I'd say 99% of the time, maybe even more, He's spot on. He's so good at that, and that's where having someone with that level of expertise is really helpful, because they're the ones who can say, okay, I think you can do this today, and you can do it safely. Or in your case, Nick, if you're advising on fat loss protocols, okay, I think, you know, judging from my conversations with you, your past behavior, obviously you wouldn't vocalize this, but this is what's going through your mind. Your personality type, I think you're probably ready to handle this, and you can handle this without really eating into the limited willpower that we all have. You know, you said that lovely story of how we're limited in willpower. You remember you were talking about the experiment with I think it was with broccoli and cookies. Was it broccoli or
the marshmallow test, probably? But there's lots of different stuff. Yeah.
The marshmallow test. Yeah. So yeah. If you just to quickly quickly say what that is, to put it into context, if there were two groups, one group, I'm probably getting the food groups wrong, but one group was said, "Oh, eat some broccoli for 10 minutes or whatever." And then they were given a tough math problem to do. And another group was said, and there's a tray of cookies there. They're told, don't touch the cookies, eat the broccoli. And another group were told, oh, have whatever you like. And the group that were told to have whatever you like applied themselves to the math problem, something like twice as long as the group that was limited to just the broccoli. And it's thought that because they had to apply willpower
That's a slightly different one than what I was talking about. But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. There's the willpower depletion. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, especially with something like fat loss, you have to sort of take into account how much of that willpower that person has left. And that's where having a good coach like Nick or myself really comes into play.
Yeah, and that subject, I mean, because I think it was Roy Baumeister that did most of the work on willpower as a muscle that can be depleted. But I think then it was maybe Carol Dweck, or perhaps it was somebody else. But they basically kind of turned that on its head in another article in 2009, maybe 2011, that basically said, you know, people who believe that their willpower is limited, it is, and those who believe that their willpower isn't limited, well, it isn't. I would say in general, you know, there has to be a limit for most people. I mean, unless you're a saint, no matter how tough you think you are, you've given enough stress. Again, everybody cracks under torture, right? And hunger is a form of torture. At least it's considered to, or sleep deprivation is considered a form of torture. I think hunger might be too. But anyway, they're both very important biological processes. So, yeah, you can't rely on that willpower forever is the main lesson. Yeah. And, you know, we can debate the fine points of it, but in general, don't rely on willpower more than you need to.
Fantastic. You got anything to add on that, Nick?
The moving to setbacks?
Yeah.
All right. So setbacks, you know, is it you? Is it others? Is it your environment? you know, who's to blame? But I think usually people can identify what those are and then dealing with them appropriately. What would you say about that?
Yes.
Do most people, are they able to identify what's causing the setbacks and decide what they need to do, or is there something else going on?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Something I've often said in the past, when I've had people say to me, "Oh, it's all right for you. You lift in a gym. You've got people, you know, watching your form and coaching you. What do I do?" And I say, "Well, you take a video of yourself. And once you take that video of yourself, chances are you'll see what the problem is." Mm. So. Yes, and if you apply that to fat loss, you keep a food log, chances are you'll see what the problem is.
But only 100% of the time.
Yes. Yeah. I remember I used to work with a guy as a registered dietitian, and he used to, have the odd client who he'd say, "Okay, fill out a food log for 3 days or whatever." And they'd bring the food log in. They'd go, his name was Chris as well. And they'd come into the gym. "Is Chris here?" I go, no, he's not here at the moment. And I said, "Is that a food log?" And then I said, yes, this is for Chris. Yeah. The registered dietitian who's done 6 years of university training, et cetera, whatever it is, and worked in the NHS. And I sort of look at it. I go, "Yeah, you can see where the problem is, can't you?" And they go, "Yes." You don't need a registered dietitian. Just look at it. Where's the problem? It's the cakes, or it's the alcohol, or it's the there you go. And we're sort of moving on to the next point, aren't we? Assessing the outcome, When that happens, the question is, what are you prepared to do about it then? And it's like, I think I'll, as you had a sort of short lived client, I think about a year ago, Nick, didn't you? What are you prepared to do about it? Well, I'm not going to write it down anymore. I'm going to bury my head in the sand.
Oh, that was so sad. I haven't talked to that guy. He was actually a good friend of mine in college, but poor guy. You know, and I keep seeing like these Facebook updates, you know, and he's always like trying to do some exercise for a short amount of time and then getting injured because he's overweight, and any kind of exercise that's strenuous is going to injure him. And you know, and you know, he can't keep a food log because it's too depressing. Ah, it just breaks my heart.
The shall I tell the Harvard professor and Ayn Rand story?
Sure.
Which I think might be exaggerated because it was I heard it from Leonard. Oh, I can't remember his name now, but he's
a big fish story anyway.
Yeah, he's a real disciple of Ayn Rand. He's sort of the guy who continued the objectivism agenda when she died. But he tells a story in one of his books about a Harvard professor in philosophy who met with Ayn Rand, and they apparently spoke through the night, and he left her apartment, and he said, "This damn woman, she has challenged all my positions. I have nothing with which to come back to her with, and it all this means one thing: I must never see this woman again." Yeah, I love the story because it just sort of it resonates so well with cognitive dissonance. You know, we want one outcome, and then we examine our actions and we ignore them. we're very good at that as humans.
You bet. It's a very good analogy for, yeah, so many things. But yeah, the food log, it applies very well to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and once you do the log, dear listener, you probably don't even need to send it to Nick. You just look at it and you go, ah.
Well, I mean, that's going to be my thing. If, you know, you need help getting into the habit of making a food log, fine. But, you know, if you watch the videos and you're just not able to make a food log, or you just won't make one, well, then I won't help you. Because I don't have enough information to act on. You know, you can be telling me one thing, but, you know, if your little funny thing that sits on top of your shoulders is different from reality, well, that explains the disconnect between why you're not getting to where you want to be. You know, I got to have that food log, some kind of objective, measurable thing. You know, it goes back to the SMART goals at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, well, I suppose it all does. It all comes back to that, doesn't it?
Well, the thing is, some of these habits, like, I don't want to even talk about calories at the beginning, because a lot of people can lose, you know, 20 pounds, 40 pounds without counting calories. But, you know, to get that 8-pack that you saw on the website, or, you know, to break through a plateau, to get to a leaner level than you're currently at, you've got to be counting those calories. It's simple as that. But you can get a whole lot of fat loss without counting calories. So I don't want people to get the wrong impression there, but, you know, if you're at a plateau and you're not logging, you deserve not to get any more progress because the log is required. That's just required.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to get stronger, you got to lift heavier weights. You got to, like, be lifting heavier weights and challenging yourself with something more volume, greater frequency, something. You got to be doing something. Same thing with the fat loss. If you're at a plateau, you got to start logging.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. It's taking that action, isn't it? Yeah, we're back to that. And sometimes the action's painful, but nonetheless, it's still necessary.
Exactly.
And that's really the first thing, isn't it? Again, we're going back to the SMART goal. Yeah, I don't need to go back to that. Just listen to the start of the show again. Anyway, is there anything else about dealing with setbacks? Like, I see you put environment down here, which I know is, you know, obviously close to your heart.
Sure.
Yeah, as you're deadlifting, you have to wait for someone to finish on the leg press so you can take the only frigging weights they have in the gym and put them on the bar, and then you have to make sure no one's overhead pressing near you. Oh, is he gonna drop the weight on my head? Oh, okay, no, he managed to survive that. And I remember one video you took, Nick, where the guy was checking out your ass as you deadlifted, which is fair enough. That's, yeah, if that
all the guys check out my ass when I'm deadlifting, Chris. None of the ladies seem to care though. They're busy walking.
good stuff.
So again, it kind of goes back to those, I'd say when it comes to diet, training and sleep, if those are kind of, you really don't have anybody to blame but yourself if you're going, well, I'm just going to watch another TV show before I go to bed. Okay, well, that's all on you. If you don't make 5 minutes and start off Kaizen, if you say I have no time, you know what? You got 5 minutes a day to do something. I don't care if you're the busiest man in the world. You got 5 minutes a day to do something. And, Kaizen from there. And the same can be with sleep. If you don't have any time to sleep, add 5 minutes. that's where Kaizen is really, it takes any kind of excuse out of the equation. So, the things that are on you, those are on you. You've got to improve them. Nobody else can do that for you. But when it comes to others in the environment, a lot of people love to shift the blame there and go like, oh, it's my friends. They all want to drink on the weekend. So, man up and get better friends that don't want to drink on the weekend. screw it. you got to have people that, uplift, inspire you, and help you get to your goals. I mean, that's what real friends do. They help you, and they support you. And you do that. If you're a good friend, you do that for your friends as well. And if you say, look, I'm a fat tubby and I've got, a lot of potential risk factors for my health in the future here, and I want to change that, have more energy and a better life and a much better looking body so I can, get a wife someday or something. if your friends aren't behind you for that, they're not good friends to keep. And so fuck them. Tell them, be clear with them, say, hey, look, this is what I'm trying to do. Are you going to support me or not? And if they say, no, screw you, you're no fun, well then fine. Don't talk to them. Don't put them down. Screw that. You don't need to put them down or try to get them on board or anything. Just give them the choice. The ball's in their court. They decide. So the ones that, like all of my good friends, I've had them for well over a decade, and they're not going to leave anytime soon because they're just good people that are always looking out for my best interests and want to be supportive. Whereas other people that I've parted ways with, they have their own agenda, and a lot of them are stuck in a rut, and they're not going to come out of it anytime soon, so they're not good friends to keep. So, you have a lot more power. Don't use your friends as an excuse to be fat and lazy. That's an excuse. And same thing with your environment in general. A lot of people choose to work. I mean, work is one of those issues. You don't really want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, but a lot of people choose to work a lot more than they have to support bad habits like going out and drinking on a regular basis and spending too much money on partying and food and stuff. So, or supplements. They have no money, but they spend, $500 a month on cosmetics and supplements. There's a problem with that. So, again, with your environments too, it's all on you, really, as long as you just got to step up and take responsibility for it and, be willing to make that change. But it really comes down to what you're willing to do, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, some people listening to this, Nick is, and obviously Nick only knows what it's like to be Nick. I only know what it's like to be me. This is where, our own reality really kicks in. And a lot of people listening to that might be, well, I can't get rid of my friends. And well, Nick would say, yes, you can. I would agree with him, but this is something you can Kaizen. As you're finding people who are more supportive of what you're trying to do, then you could slowly lessen the amount of time you spend with the people who aren't as supportive. And sometimes it's impossible, not impossible. Sometimes it's very hard to remove these negative influences from your life. They might be your partner, might be your parents, might be your siblings. Sure. It could be all sorts. But you can decide how much time you're going to spend with Uncle Bill at Christmas time. Okay. Occasionally you might have to sit next to him, but you can still make decisions, and you can say, okay, I'm just not going to bother. The guy's not worth, worrying about or arguing with or whatever. And you just check out for that amount of time, as it were. You don't have to be, I suppose, emotionally invested in that time. If you have a friend who's saying to you, oh, yeah, what do you want to do? What do you want to go to the gym for? If you still feel the need to see this friend, then, you know, don't be emotionally invested in the time you spend with them. Use that with other people, people who are more likely to help you.
Yeah,
it's a tough one.
Because, you know, what happens is you don't have time for better influences if you're attached to negative ones, right? So if I like your idea of applying Kaizen to that, because honestly, I hadn't really thought about that, but then I kind of live on my own little isolated island here anyway, right? Like, I see my wife and my coworkers. Friends, what's that? They're my coworkers, basically. But, you know, if you say bye-bye to one person, then you have room for another better person. So maybe you, instead of saying goodbye to a lot of negative influences at once, you just say goodbye to one negative influence and find one better influence to take that place. And then do that with the next and so on and so forth. And, yeah. You know, if you have some really good friends, I mean, I guess one thing that I'm always complimented on, if I were to take pride in one thing, it would be that people say that my friends are really good friends to have. And I know some really good people. You're one of those really good people. And these people are going to be around in my life, you know, for the foreseeable future unless something really unfortunate happens. And, you know, you can't ask for anything better, you know, as a form of a social environment. Granted, I don't get to see these people as often as I'd like. But, you know, we have some really good relationships and we keep up with each other and so on. And we support each other no matter how far the distance is. You know, we're helping each other out and we're on opposite sides of the world. And that's the case with most of my really good relationships. But we're still helping each other out, even though it's, you know, by talking, emails, whatever. So find those kinds of people, get them in your life, surround yourself with that, and get rid of the negativity because you don't need that.
I'm going to be slightly indulgent here, but then it's our podcast. What the hell? What Nick brings to me is if I'm doing a podcast or we're doing a podcast on, say, something that I'm considered to be more expert in. There's not many subjects left that I'm more expert than Nick in, but let's just say the squat. We're doing episode 7 all over again on the squat. I could do a monologue and just record it and then put it up. I'm sure I could learn how to do that. But having Nick there, it doesn't just make it better. We explore the little idiosyncrasies surrounding that whole subject in a lot more depth. And I'd like to think that I do that when it's something that he's more expert in, that I'll ask the odd question. And the sum of us both doing the podcast is greater than the individual parts.
Oh, that's
what I think. And that's what a friendship's like. It's, you know, when Nick came to train with me here, you know, he made me better and I made him better. And that's what it's all about. And it's in lifting, it's very obvious because the result is there. But from, you know, I don't think if I hadn't met you, Nick, I don't think I'd be, looking to improve myself in as many ways as I'm trying to now as I do. I don't think I'd be reading the type of material that I'd be reading. I don't think I'd be thinking the thoughts that I'd be thinking. Yeah, I think it's totally different, and you've helped me move on as a person. I'd like to think maybe in my own little way I've maybe helped you along that way as well, and that's how humanity improves.
Yeah, humanity, we're actually good for something to each other if we're using each other right.
and dear listener, if you think of your own relationships in the same way. You know, are the people you're surrounding yourself. You know, my partner, she has made me so much a better person than I would have been if I didn't live with her. I'm absolutely, okay, you can never be sure of such things. But, I'd probably be I'd hate to think what I'd be like if I hadn't been with her for the last 16, 17 years. Sometimes you don't need that many people, but you just need the good ones. And obviously that's a thing. God, we're getting all philosophical here, Nick, but that's an issue you have, isn't it? You said that pretty much your life, most of the time, most of the year is your coworkers and thankfully your wife and, you know, not that much else, but the friends you have, the ones you talk to me on Skype every week, and there's probably a few others you do as well. You know, hopefully it's obviously is enough to keep you going and keep you growing and keep you improving.
Oh yeah. And, you know, I'm spending most of the time with the best influence on my life. So, very yeah. fortunate that way as well. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
So it's all a warm, fuzzy feeling right now.
It is. This big, warm, fuzzy feeling.
It's probably a good place to end it, to be honest.
Actually, yeah, that's very nice. I'd like to say more good things about you, but I don't think I can follow your 10 minutes of praise in my head. Pretty heavy right now. It's kind of like a black hole. It's just sucking other things into it, and all the food's gone suddenly in my house.
No, but I do want to make it sort of like a backslapping session. I wanted to sort of hopefully give people something to ponder on as well, and that's how we get the message across, isn't it? We tell stories and hopefully people can pick up on that and it can enrich their lives as well. That's why we're doing this, isn't it?
Yep. And I feel like with the Earn Your Carbs, you're very much an inspiration with the all the products you put out. I'm like, Chris, do this, do that, do the other thing. Sure, I'm doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, but you have the actual the blog posts and the books and all that stuff. So and training wise, you know, you kind of remind me not to be a pussy in the gym, which
I don't think that would ever happen, mate.
I've been once, and well, you know, to varying degrees.
we all have our right? pussy days.
It's all relative.
It is absolutely. Yeah, yeah. As we've said before, I was talking to Russ about his extra sessions that he does in his work gym, and him on his extra sessions, he's working harder than everyone else in the gym, which is ridiculous. Yeah, he's not doing any big lifts. He's just doing face pulls and overhead abs and maybe some external rotations and stuff like that. Yeah. Oh dear. Anyways, anything to add, Nick?
I think that's good. Stretch, don't snap, and lots to ponder there. Thanks a bunch, Chris. I had a really good time again.
No, that's excellent, and I think that's going to be a good one. I predict that's going to be a good one. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That was Mighty Cast 75. 75, Nick. Wow. At the stretch zone. So, you're all gonna have various goals in your life, and you can think of where you are now in relation to where you could be if the vernal equinox happened. You know, if everything was in line, and you had the perfect storm of 10 years of perfect training, nutrition, sleep. Where would you be in your strength, fitness, and body fat related goals? And where are you on that continuum with that? And the way you move along it is to apply the stretch zone. So there you go. Thank you, Nick.
Pleasure, Chris. Thank you very much.
That was marvelous. I've no idea what we're going to do next week. We'll come up with something, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll make something up.
And thanks to all you for listening. Anything to add, Nick?
Nope. Have a good one. Why don't you close us off here?
All right, then. And everyone, have a good week till next week, and may your God go with you.